Hello and welcome to the King Hero IndyCar podcast with Kirby and Justin. Kirby, how are you?
Doing well, Justin. How about yourself?
I have had a reasonably good day. Yes, thank you.
Glad to hear it.
Kirby, exciting episode. We're going to cover a whole gamut of things, but probably most exciting is our predictions for the year. We did very well last year. And I'm hoping to, you know, repeat that performance in this coming year.
Be hard to trust or hard to top our success rate from last year, I think.
Well, it's very true, but we're going to try. Kirby, a little bit going on. I mean, hell, we got a race this week, coming weekend, do we not?
We do. Long off season's over.
So we timestamp this, record this Monday evening. On March 4th, and I don't know exactly when I'll get it out, but I'm going to do my best to get it out quickly, and Kirby's going to do his best to remain brief in his comments.
I'll do my part if you do yours.
I will. Kirby, let's get to all things IndyCar, because I am on a hard stop here tonight. Kirby, NASCAR is constantly infringing on IndyCar's trademarks, greatest spectacle in racing, and F1 seems to be doing more of the same. I guess my question is, does F1 really give a damn whether they're infringing on IndyCar's trademark or not?
Of course not. They're going to push that boundary as hard as they can. And so far, IndyCar is taking the soft glove approach, but they might get pushed into a corner and have to fight back a little harder.
Yeah, they might have to go Zach Brown on their ass.
That's right. It's worth at least $30 million.
Exactly. I mean, put a number on it, right?
Right.
Maybe that's some much needed revenue source for the to make up for the $20 million they're losing running the rest of the series throughout the year. I don't know. I kind of get the feeling like, F1 is just kind of like, what is that gnat that's biting me on the back of my elbow? And it's just kind of shooing it away.
We could yent on all night about the Formula One arrogance, and we'll just stop right here. I will. At least I will.
I don't think it's arrogance. I think it's just a matter of, size. And Kirby, speaking of NASCAR, it's also come out that they spent $5 million to get their stuff up on Netflix. Do you think that's money well spent?
I do. They're playing in the big leagues. They surely have to spend more than that to put on those stupid races at the Coliseum. Same thing with the race at City of Chicago streets, and so I gotta think that's a pittance compared to what it costs to put those other kind of things on, and they're all just big marketing exercises to keep pushing the NASCAR brand and to try to draw in more fans.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would almost argue that's a bargain. So my next question to you would be: if IndyCar were to offer Netflix $5 million, would they take it?
Well. Like they would have. I don't know they would now, but they got so much racing property going on there. But if you think about it, how many commercials on TV on a reasonably decently rated show would $5 million buy?
Right.
So this is just a big commercial and you're on Netflix forever, right?
Yeah. Hopefully. No, I agree. I think it's a bargain, actually.
Yeah. Would you rather do that, or would you rather be on CW for free?
Apparently, IndyCar would rather be on CW for free.
Yeah.
Okay, before we start bashing them mercilessly, Kirby, I do feel that I do need to say something here, and I'm wondering if you agree. It seems like in the last few weeks in particular, we've been seeing a little bit of maybe indications of some common sense coming out of IndyCar. Like... and I'll just to go through a few of the things, like the franchise thing is kind of back on the table. There was even kind of a reference to a new chassis along with the new engine formula. And there's been some, things around the races and just kind of doing things a little smarter around the races and so forth. Do you think IndyCar is finally hearing us on this podcast? Are they finally reacting, what we've been trying to tell them? Or am I just being too optimistic?
Well, no, I think I saw in one of those stories a clear reference to them listening to our show every every 2 or 3 weeks when it comes out, right? No, I mean, look, common sense is common sense. They don't need to listen to us to luck into some every now and then. Not only is a franchise system back in the news, but it's back in the news without guaranteed spots at the Indy 500. So that's encouraging. And the way you describe the engine slash chassis package for in the future, like, I think it's, you made it sound like it's kind of a bit of a rumor, but I think it's been firmly stated by Mark Miles in the Indianapolis Star and a couple of different articles. They're definitely pointing in that direction. It sounds like I'd be surprised if they actually make it in 2027, but certainly by 2028, they ought to have their act together.
Let's hope we live that long.
they really got to get that all done by the end of this year if they want to be ready to go in 27.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, they got to start pretty much now if they're going to do that. Yeah. Or, but we've seen them kind of do rush jobs on other things before. Curb, let's not.
Well, you know, maybe it won't be the beginning of 27. Maybe it'll be the middle of 27. Who knows?
But look, man, all I can tell is like they can't do it quick enough. A new chassis, and you know, let's hope the engine formula makes some sense too. There was a really interesting blurb I saw from Roger Penske where he was kind of like talking about how the car market's going away from electric vehicles now, and that, you know, internal combustion engines were kind of making their comeback in the automotive market. I found that an interesting comment from Penske. It's, you know, to extrapolate, he's not interested in putting electric cars out there on the track, which thank God for that.
I don't know how you have a racing experience with an electric vehicle, right? I mean, it's, you know, can you imagine 300,000 people at the speedway and a bunch of cars going by silently?
No, you've mentioned that before, and I agree. It's, and I don't even think it's something the youth wants to see. It falls flat, and I don't hear F1 talking about it either, right?
No, I've heard NASCAR talk about it a little bit, but you know, I think Mark Miles, I think, made a similar comment, although he referred to the market, you know, kind of trending towards hybrids rather than just full-blown ICE internal combustion engines. And he said, you know, we may just be lucky if, you know, that we're late to the party, but the party's coming back in our direction. But so he didn't claim any skill. He claimed luck, to his credit. But
yeah, give him full credit for that. And that's true, by the way. The market is definitely, if you look at Ford in particular, like they made a big push in EVs and all of a sudden realized that they weren't able to manufacture them as cheap as they can in China. And maybe that's not the way to push the market.
No, I think they're all having trouble getting rid of their electric car inventories. And Mr. Toyota, the guy that was pushing hybrids a couple years ago, got his hand slapped, looking a little more prescient right now.
He's probably got a little Dixon smugness about him.
Yeah.
Kerb, you watch any of the Formula One race? Bahrain?
No, I did not.
Okay. I did. As you know, I was in Alaska. I had some downtime up there, so there was time on my hands. So I watched both the qualifying and the race. Not at speed. At regular speed.
Okay. You have to clarify that. What does that mean?
Well, usually when I watch a Formula One race, I watch the table on the left and kind of fast forward till there's a change, and then I stop it and play that portion of the video.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you watched it live, essentially.
It wasn't live, but
plausibly,
I watched it as if I was watching it live.
Right. Okay.
Okay. And I subscribed for $89 to the Formula One television package for the year.
That's the online package?
Yes. Okay. $89. You can watch every session.
Is that the James Hinchcliffe version?
He's been on that version before. He was not on the Bahrain. It was Jody and Palmer and David Coulthard, and I'm not sure who the other guy was.
Right.
But they're very good. I have to say they're very good. So I watched, it was not the most exciting race, but they made it interesting to me, right? They do a very good job.
Glad to hear.
Julian Palmer in particular is very good, I think. Would you like to hear my comments about it? Probably not, but I'm going to give them to you anyways.
I'm sure our listeners are dying to hear them.
So, statements of the obvious, Red Bull's still way ahead. There was much talk during qualifying how close everything was going to be. Usually saying, we're going to be really close except Max, right? who seems to be in a league of his own. You might be interested to know there was a little bit of kerfuffle between Danny Ricks and Yuki at the end of the race.
I did read about that, yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of, I see Yuki's point here. They made him give up his position to Danny Ricks, who was running behind him the whole time. And of course, he was on a different tire strategy. So the justification was he's on red tires, softer red tires at the end. He has a chance to maybe advance where Yuki doesn't. It was hard to watch that and say that he looked like he had any real chance. And then they gave him the shot to do it, you know, so Yuki pulled over, Danny Ricks pulls up, and he got nowhere. I think the thing to have done, and Danny Ricks said he would have done it if ordered to, but, you know, that's always a spurious reasoning, right? Is they should have swapped back at the end and at least given, I mean, it's a, what do they call it, a Pyrrhic victory? Am I using the right term?
Pyrrhic?
Yeah, Pyrrhic victory in the sense that it doesn't matter. There's no points for 12 or 13th, right? But there is still a race going on between those two in the sense of, you know, there's that Red Bull seat coming available. And, you know, I think probably Yuki's in a contract year and we know Danny Ricks is. You still want to beat your teammate, right? Everybody always says that about F1. Well, the one thing is you got to beat your teammate. So, in essence, Danny Ricks is ahead of Yuki, but only because of team orders so far this season. So I understand why he's pissed off. I don't blame him. I think that's completely legit.
You're talking about Yuki being pissed off?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah, because
the headlines I read were Danny Ricks was pissed off because Yuki wouldn't pull over when first order or something.
He
like
took
that.
A lap or two to get to it, you know, get his mind around.
That's just it. He wasted the tires in those couple of laps, and that was the reason why he couldn't advance.
I think if anybody from Red Bull is watching Danny Ricks' performance in that first race, they're not exactly running out to go sign him for the Red Bull seat yet, just yet.
And we're talking about Checo's seat.
Checo's seat, yep.
Is it officially open or just assumed to be open?
I mean, there seems to be little doubt about this.
And then I saw a rumor or a potential rumor that Toto Wolff was going to go after Verstappen for his seat, for Lewis Hamilton's old seat.
I think they got Verstappen tied up for a lot of years. I don't think that's possible.
I know it seems stupid, but they'll write anything these days to get some clicks.
I suppose that's true. The other interesting thing, and I won't belabor our point on F1 because I know you hate it. I've started watching the Drive to Survive series for this session. And it's been, even by my wife, who's the fan's admission, kind of a bordering on repetitive episodes, right? There's after 6 years or however long they've been doing this, there doesn't seem to be much new there, right?
Hard to introduce yourself to the sport after 6 years.
Yeah, and so it is getting a little bit not that interesting. Now, this year, as they're filming this year, there's so much going on that I think it probably will be interesting, actually. But at least for this session, it seems like, God, you know, I've heard all this before. And one of the more interesting, the only one I can remember, so I'm going to call that the more interesting episodes, is the one around Otmar Schnaffauer, or whatever his name is, who was running, you know, formerly Renault, now out Team Alpine, and how he got fired middle of the year unceremoniously at a race, like in the middle of a race weekend, by a bunch of guys with heavy French accents. And they're all saying, well, you know, we need to perform, we need to do better, and all this kind of thing, right? It came across as classic French arrogance, let's put it that way. and they kind of unceremoniously fired their team principal, like in kind of an embarrassing and, you know, not very delicate way. And it's what's interesting is that Alpine this year is bringing up the bottom. Like, they got the worst cars of in all of Formula One, including Haas. And they're a factory team with a huge budget. So it is a underperformance on a massive level. And I just thought that was kind of an interesting juxtaposition to watch that, how they kind of raked that guy over the coals and then replaced him with, you know, people they thought were better, and they're doing much, much worse.
Alpine 2 years ago was Fernando Alonso, and they were knocking on the door to be the best midfield team, weren't they?
Yes, they were in the mix. And even last year, they were in the mix of midfield. But, you know, they're a factory team, so they want to be top three. They don't want to be – they certainly don't want to be five or six. And at the very least, they want to be four. I think last year their stated objective was to be four.
Okay, but now you're saying they're 10.
Now they're 10. Now they're at the bottom.
Quite a fall.
And the money they're spending, right, is what's interesting. The money that Renault is spending on this venture to be embarrassingly 10th. It's one of those things that makes Formula One kind of interesting. I know you don't find it that way, but I really do think that that's half of the interest, is just that whole subtext of a massive company with massive resources massively underperforming for what appears to be internal political reasons.
I'm not saying that's without interest to me, but anyway, it doesn't matter. they're just so full of themselves that it's hard to fight through all that to get to the interesting parts, right?
For you.
And I don't pay close enough attention to just drop in and read something and understand it and then drop back out again. So yeah. I just don't bother. Okay, well, good. I appreciate. Thanks for the Formula One update. How did Lewis Hamilton do?
Worse than his teammate, Russell.
So he got beat by his teammate.
Yeah. It's really interesting. Sainz outperformed Leclerc at Ferrari, and he's booted, right? He already knows he's booted.
Mm-hmm.
And Russell, the question with Russell is he going to become the team leader at Mercedes after Lewis leaves? That's a big question. So guys that were highly motivated to do well seem to do well. Make of that what you will. Right.
Right.
There's a psychological game going on in racing for sure.
And then they race again this coming Saturday, right?
That is correct, Kerb. They are racing in Saudi Arabia and Jeddah, which is a really cool track, I think, this weekend.
And then I see here a headline, that Alpine's technical director and head of aero leave amid restructuring. So it must have been a pretty bad race on Saturday for Alpine.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it seems like they just keep firing people because it's all wrong. But my guess is all the problems at the very top, right? It's probably usually what you find. Except in my business, of course, it's never something I did.
It is a nice looking green car.
It is.
Steak. Now it's called Steak.
Yeah, it's attractive. Attractive car.
Cool.
Steak's a betting deal, Kerb.
Oh, great.
One more F1 thing before in our IndyCar podcast. Is Josh Verstappen the world's worst Little League dad?
Sure sounds like it. He's got to be a piece of work.
Can you imagine? Christian Horner's probably just sitting there, just doesn't know which way is up.
Yeah, I don't know. Like we just discussed, I don't pay close enough attention, but I can't imagine Christian Horner wouldn't have enough credits built up to his name to withstand a little controversy.
They're having a go at him, man, and now Max Verstappen's father is leading the charge.
Yeah, well, I guess
I thought, and I gotta say, I lost a bit of respect for. I mean, Toto Wolff has always been Toto Wolff to me, but like Zach Brown, like having a dig at Christian Horner, I thought that was a bit rich too. Frankly.
Yeah, well, like I told you, Toto Wolff was just crying and whining a month or two ago about him and his wife being investigated, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's like these guys. I guarantee you neither of those two are saints.
Is that sure? No, they don't get to where they are by being saints. There's no way.
Yeah. So.
I thought that was pretty poor.
Yeah, I agree. I want to like Zach Brown, but that knocked him down a couple of notches for me, unfortunately.
Yeah. I agree.
You know what you say in that situation, Curb? Nothing at all.
Right. I agree. 100%.
Okay. Curb, you ready to jump into some IndyCar action?
Let's do it.
Let's do some predictions here, shall we?
Lead the way.
Okay. I would like to start with Rookie of the Year.
Well, I doubt we'll have much debate on this, but you go first.
Well, that's interesting because I had two candidates in my mind.
Okay. Do both their names end in Quist?
They do indeed. I'm going to have to say Linus Lundqvist. But I think Blomqvist could surprise. What about you?
I think Lundqvist is a slam dunk for this one. He, Blomqvist, and Kiffin Simmons will be the only three doing a full schedule, if I read this correctly. Rasmussen will be doing a partial schedule with Ed Carpenter Racing, and that partial schedule, I guess, keeps shrinking as they keep changing events from road courses or street courses to ovals. So he'll be doing barely more than half the events this year. But
you also forgot about Pietro Fittipaldi.
Does he qualify as a rookie?
On the list I'm looking at, he has an R next to his name.
Really? It just seems like he's been in and out so many times, I wasn't sure I could include him as a rookie. But I guess I'm corrected there. I still think that Lundqvist is a pretty solid bet. He's with the best team. He took that same equipment that nobody could make work at Meyer-Shank last year and performed really well. So when he's in the Ganassi camp, I got to believe that he'll have a lot of consistency with the car and he'll do very well. Blomqvist will have his moments, I think, but he'll get bitten by the Meyer-Shank inconsistency bug.
Agreed. Plus, he's going to need a few races to sort himself out.
Yeah, he didn't really get a fair chance with those handful of races last year to get much done. He get knocked out early at least one of those races, and I don't think he really got the full experience.
Yeah, agreed. Curb, 500 champion.
My head says Palau, and my heart says Will Power, and I'm going to go with my heart. Will Power.
My head says Palau, and not my heart says Dixon, and I'm going to say Dixon.
All right. Well, they're all solid. Palau and Dixon are probably solid predictions. Power's got a little bit more wish casting involved, but he really was right there last year with Newgarden, and then something went wrong. Either on a pit stop or he rushed a wall or something late in the race that took him out of contention. And so if Penske continues their improvement that they showed last year at the track, at the Speedway, and I think that a sneaky benefit here is, all this, when everybody talks about the Penske Foyt Technical Alliance, they look at everything it's going to do for Foyt. But I think Penske's and Tim Cindric be very happy to have access to Michael Cannon's knowledge and what he did with the Foyt cars last year at the Speedway and what he can help Penske do with their cars at the Speedway. So I think Penske should be stronger even than they were last year. And again, I'm going to go with my heart and go with Power.
Fair enough. Curb, give me the top three for the championship in order, please.
Nugo, Scotty Mac, and Dixon.
Wow. Okay. I'm calling it Palau, Scotty Mack, Will Power. How do you like them apples?
All legitimate picks. I have a hard time seeing Palau Look, Palau's going to be strong. He'll be a contender, obviously. But, you know, in 2023, Palau had an average finishing position of 3.7, which is the lowest by anybody in IndyCar going back to 2016. I don't think he'll be able to replicate that. He had too much good fortune. And I think it's a concern that Ganassi is expanding to five cars. And I worry that that'll be tough for them to swallow and tough for them to maintain their consistent excellence.
Plus, the oval thing is definitely in Newgarden's favor.
Well, definitely. And it should be in Scotty Mack's favor, too. Should be in Team Penske's favor in general. Palau had one good race at Iowa last year, but yeah, he isn't quite as stout on the shorter ovals as he is on the speedway.
Yeah. Well, I left them out. I'm going to continue my theme with Newgarden that he's holding on too tight.
Well, you know, the big story of the winter is that he's relaxing. He's peeling away all the things that infringe upon his time and on his attention. And he was more inconsistent last year than I can ever remember seeing him since he joined Penske. So I got to believe that they'll fix that. And maybe he can channel some of that willpower zen from a couple of years ago.
Well, the only thing we agreed on there was Scotty Mack is going to be in the mix.
Yeah, I mean, Scotty Mack actually had the third best average finish last year. Of course, he finished third in standing, so I guess that makes sense. But he didn't have very many wins or podiums. And so basically he rode a, top 10 resume to third place last year. He's got to up his game and get that into the top five this year if he really wants to contend for the championship, I think.
Okay. Kerb, I'm struggling a little bit. You can help me. I think we have 27 full-time entries. How many is the driver's circle? Is it 24?
Still 22, I believe.
Oh, so there's quite a few people that are going to be missing out.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, yeah, it'll be an interesting competition this year.
You care to name who those people will be?
Well, right now you got to start out with the two coin entries, don't you?
Yep.
So there's two. Then I'm going to say that Stingray Rob's got to be a candidate.
Yeah.
That's three. And then you're going to get into a lot of names that might surprise you, right? I mean, it's slim pickings after that for obvious dead weight this year.
So we're three. I agree with those three. I'm going to throw Kiffin Simpson out there.
Yeah, I mean, I hesitate because of the team he's with, but he's got to be on the list.
Okay. So that's four.
And I guess my next best bet would be Canapino.
That's also who I had my eye on as well. So I think we pretty much agree there. I would throw in, as possibilities, a Rasmussen Carpenter car.
Yeah.
And possibly Santino Ferrucci.
I agree. I think I would throw Fittipaldi and Grosjean in the mix.
Ooh.
Fittipaldi to me is an unknown quantity, and I think when he's actually competed in IndyCar, I don't remember him doing well.
Dazzled. I agree. Fittipaldi, I agree. Grosjean is a bigger call, but I think that's your list. I think that's your list.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. All right, Kerb, last prediction question before we get to St. Pete predictions.
Mm-hmm.
Name your top 10 for the championship.
Team Penske is three. Yep. Dixon Palau make five. Award makes six. Those are your obvious ones. I'm going to say Lundgaard seven. Lundqvist eight. And then it comes down to Team Andretti and Alex Rossi for the last two spots. And I'm going to go with Kirkwood and Erickson.
Okay. We're not too far off. Here's mine. Penske 3, Dixon and Palau, Pato, Kirkwood, Lundgaard, Herta, and Erickson. No Rossi.
Well, I mean, I dropped Rossi too. So, okay. So you got all of Andretti, Team Andretti, or Andretti Global.
I guess I did.
Yeah.
I think Erickson's going to be surprisingly good this year.
He always surprises, doesn't he?
He does, but I actually think
he's consistently top six the last 3 years, but he's a surprise every year.
I know, but I think he's going to be surprisingly good. I think Herta's going to have a bit of a renaissance, and Kirkwood's good.
Yeah, no, did I hear that Craig Hampson ended up at Andretti?
He's gone to Andretti.
You heard? Okay. I'd heard that, but then I couldn't find it again. So,
yeah.
So that's got to be a big help. I don't know if he's working with a specific driver or if he's
over all three cars.
Over all three, but up until then, the only thing they seem to have done to improve things was to cut down to three cars, and that didn't seem like enough. So, adding Craig Hampson is significant, I think, and should bode well for them.
We're leaving a couple of names out of there, but. You kind of have to.
Well, which one jumps out at you?
I mean, that Rossi obviously is probably the biggest one. Little Dave, who he struggled, or he talked about his struggles that he's going to be encountering.
Right.
Graham Rahal's out. That's, you could argue Graham should be a top tenner. But he's out.
Well, to be fair to ourselves, I don't think Rahal's been in the top 10 for a handful of years now. Rossi's been floating around 10th place for a couple of years now. It's not like we're making huge leaps of faith.
And the other guy that I think, could potentially be there, but, I'm not willing to pick him, is Felix Rosenquist.
Yeah, I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. I like him. I think he'll have his moments like Blomqvist will have his moments, and his moments should be higher than Blomqvist's, but he just can't seem to finish races.
Okay. Well, we're not that far out of alignment.
Felix Rosenquist, average start 8.7, average finish 14.5. I doubt there are many larger deltas on the series last year than that one.
Let's move on to St. Pete. Let's just do a top six today, if you don't mind.
Count us off.
All right. Yep. Okay. Yeah. Rock, paper, scissors. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Scissors.
I am a rock.
Yeah. All right. You go first.
Not an easy one. First race of the season.
Well, don't forget, Grosjean was hot there last year.
He was. But I'm going to go with Alex Palou. It's a safe bet early in the year. He seems to... I don't pay a lot of attention to pre-season testing times because I think they're often misleading. But
without a doubt, I agree.
He was kind of at the top there. So he's definitely got some form. He hasn't lost any form. Let's put it that way. That's the one thing you can probably derive from that. So I'm going to stick with him. I think it's a good safe pick for that track.
Okay. I'm going to go with Scotty Mac.
But second place last year. Do I have that right? Or did he take Grosjean out? He took Grosjean out.
Grosjean took Mac out, but yeah. Depending on your point of view.
Well, I think Scott Mac's point of view was he took Grosjean out. But anyways, let's not rehash the past.
You softened on that after you saw the replay. But you decided not to press the issue, I think.
I'll go out on a limb here. Colton Herta.
Okay. Whether you've got the front or... stroking along in the back. We'll see what happens there. I'll take Dixon.
Ooh, I did not expect that.
I don't often seem to have a chance to pick him for some reason, so I'll give him a try.
I think Dixon's going to be in 6 through 10, not 1 through 5 this year. How's that?
We'll revisit that after our picks. How's that?
Okay.
Finish these picks.
I'm going to have to take Newgarden. He's just hanging out there at this point, and I got to take him.
Yeah, I can't fault you there. And as much as I'm going to root for Will Power, I'm going to pick Pat O'Ward.
Yeah, it's down to those two. I agree. So we are amazingly in line, I would say, Kirk. I mean, I took a little flyer on Herta. I don't think you would have done that. But
I actually wondered if I should take a flyer on Kirkwood myself. But I'll wait to see if he can prove a little more to me before I get fully behind him. But you mentioned Dixon, and you mentioned you think he'll fade to the second five this year. But I did a little research, over his IRL/IndyCar career. So I was lazy and didn't add in his 2 years at CART. He's won 16% of the races he's entered. He's been on the podium 39% of the time, been running at the finish 88% of the time, and he's been on the lead lap 80% of the time. And in 2023, as you and I have been predicting his slow demise for a couple of years now, he won 17.6% of the races he entered, so that's above his career average. He was on the podium 35.3%, so a bit below his 38.7% career average. Running at the finish, 94.1%, above his career 88.4% average. And on the lead lap, 70.6% of the time below his career 80.1% average. Despite, he's never been a real strong qualifier, I guess, if you look historically at the number of poles he has. So you and I have used that as qualifying to predict his demise for a while. And he's been proving us wrong, and he proved us wrong again last year. So I'm gonna stick with him in the top five and stop predicting his demise until he falls off the cliff.
Until he Elios.
Right. Yeah. Until he goes off track four times in one race. I got to stand by him and stop predicting his demise.
There's no arguing with those numbers, and there's no arguing with that thought process. And I'm not going to. I'll still stand by my prediction, but you have a very good chance of being right.
And I think he's had pretty good success at this track, I guess, is pretty much why I picked him here. But anyway, it should be interesting. There's going to be a lot of familiar names, but it's still going to be pretty intensified, I think, at the top this year.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting season for a couple of reasons. The driver mix is interesting to me. It seems like it hasn't changed much, but it kind of has, right? So the driver's mix is kind of interesting. The whole difference with having a lighter chassis or lighter chassis engine combination earlier in the year that's going to be switched up at some point to the year to a heavier hybrid driven thing could totally screw with who's hot and who's not. Has a possibility of being an interesting season.
Yeah. If Ray Hall, for instance, was on a roll late in the season, Lundgaard was on a roll late in the season, if they could come out of the gate continuing that momentum, should be even more interesting. You know, if Meyer Shank can have a few moments. But those top four teams, Penske, Ganassi, Andretti, and McLaren, will definitely be at each other's throats.
Kerb, let's end it with some thoughts on Coyne, what's going on there. I mean, Dale Coyne's always been a bit of an enigma, but this is another interesting year going into this year.
Well, it's hard to know what to think because I guess Catherine Legg is doing the ovals on one car.
I hope not.
That's what
I know
they are saying. And Nolan Siegel, is that his name? Nolan.
Yeah.
Get a handful of races, including a 500. So I think that's your lineup at the 500 is Siegel and Legg. Apparently, somebody at Honda likes Catherine Legg. I hope he's saving his Sonny's barbecue dividends to pay for all the money he's going to miss out on by not being in the leader circle. You know, I read somewhere that he lost one of his promising engineers as well, which I guess is par for the course. I think this is just a reset year for Coyne. He's going to make it through as best he can and hopefully be planning for 2025 sooner than later.
I always thought he was going to go for the money grab this year because nothing was really tripping his trigger as far as, talented drivers available. And I think he was. My impression is he's overplayed his hand. Like, he thought he had a bunch of them, and then all of a sudden he had nothing. And now he's scrambling to kind of fill the slots.
Yeah, that may be true. I don't know if there was less interest in Europe at coming over here than they anticipated. I think a lot of people thought that with the success of, the Ilots and Canapino and Palau even that have come over in recent years from Europe's feeder series, I think people expected more interest from Europe, and it didn't seem to materialize.
I think you and I both have a soft spot for Dale Coyne, but it's certainly getting back to the Dale Coyne Rent-A-Wreck days this year.
Well, and you also don't see him with any partners, right? I mean, he was partners for a number of years with Vassar Sullivan. The first year with Palau, his team Go. Recently, Rick Ware and HMD, and he ran out of partners this year, too.
He must be a difficult guy to partner with.
Yeah, Malukas was a nice driver. Rob obviously had his struggles. I forget. The year before, was it Sato and Malukas? But, when you get poached every year in your engineering department and you get in some cases, rookies or mediocre drivers to come along with those partnerships. It's probably hard to make everybody happy.
No, I think it is. I mean, it's very tough to struggle to get from the bottom to the middle to the top. And that's the interesting part of being a team owner. Dale Coyne throughout his history has been all over the place, looking like he's there on the cusp, you know, with Justin Wilson or Sebastian and Bourdais, and then the sudden retreat to, you know, Reynolds drivers. And it's, you know, for whatever reason, and he's entitled to do whatever he wants. He's probably been the most steadfast supporter of IndyCar racing that you can think of from a owner standpoint.
Right.
He does things his own way, and this year it's probably going to bite him a bit.
Well, I'm reminded of my son-in-law likes to tell me that I choose the hard way of doing things rather than the smart way sometimes. And
I would agree with him on that.
I can't help but apply that same philosophy or statement to Dale Coyne right now. It's a hard gig to find sponsorship and that kind of thing for your team, and then go out and buy the talent you need to buy. But he's taken the opposite approach for most of his career, if not all of it. It definitely seems to me to be the harder way to go.
But I would argue his failure last year, or the relative failure of the teams that he had last year, has put him in the position he's in this year. So if you're an F2 guy with some money, do you really want to join up with a team that's going to put you in the back of the field? Your career's over, right? I don't think you're going to want to be in that run in the back of the field in IndyCar if you're the hot shoe F2 driver. Nobody's going to want to pay for that and have that result, because then you're really done. You know, I mean, if you had any hopes of Formula One, that's out the window, and you're probably done in IndyCar too. And that's a rough one. So it's hard to have a lack of success and then sell your team as like someplace you want to go spend $8 million on to, you know, get little Johan in a car.
Yeah, but the flip side is that Palau came to Dale Coyne's car, and it worked out for him. He got sucked up by Ganassi a year later. Grosjean came to Coyne and got sucked up by Andretti a year later. Davey Maluka spends 2 years at Coyne. Now he's with McLaren. So, you know, there is that story to tell. Show your stuff. If you're any good, you'll have a few highlights that'll catch people's attention. They'll say, wow, if he can do that in a Coyne car, then what could he do in our car? And especially if you're bringing money with you and you show a little bit of success in a Coyne car, you can easily find your way up the ladder in IndyCar going forward.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue that, but I do think last year was kind of brutal on him for that cause. All right, Kerb, let's end it there if you don't mind.
I don't mind. Got all my research out. Nothing left to say.
At Hero IndyCar, at Hero, H-I-R-O, IndyCar, that's our X. Sponsor is Hash Hive, coming soon.
Okay, one more prediction from you.
Yes.
In 2025, Grosjean is in the IndyCar or out of IndyCar?
Mm-hmm. Out.
I agree. And that'll be my short list this year. So we'll see how we did come next winter.
He does bring status to your team. Still has a name. But that runs, you know, that diminishes year by year. And bad year this year, I would think that well would be pretty close to dry.
Unless he can channel some willpower zen, I think him and Ricardo Juncos are going to be a combustible combination. Have a chance to be a combustible combination.
Yeah. And the story of Grosjean has not changed. Is that he's blindingly fast at times and just wrecks at others. I mean, that's a very consistent thing through his career. And I don't know at this stage if he has any ability to change that. It would take an enormous effort to change that. You know, he's going to be in a car where he's going to really have to push it to kind of get there. And, you know, as a record checkers guy, that's not a foreboding of good things.
No. All right. Well, everybody, the long off season is over, and hope enjoy your IndyCar weekend this week, and we'll be back to wrap it up following the race.
Yeah, don't be so eager there, Kerb. We'll get back some point.
Sometime between St. Pete and the thermal non-race, we'll be back.
There you go. I'll commit to that.
Okay. All righty. Take care, everybody.